Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
You are back with Jake and Stacy. I am Jake Heaps. In replace of Stacy Ross for today, we have Dave Grosby. We are excited to be joined by Dave Sims, play-by-play voice of the Mariners for both Root Sports and the Seattle Mariners Radio Network on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Dave, how you doing?
Jake, nice to meet you. And Gris, I know you from many moons. Good to be with you, fellas. How you doing?
Good to talk to you
fantastic.
Again, Big Daddy.
We're excited to have you on. Well, so we appreciate you joining with us.
Appreciate it, man. You bet.
Yeah, Dave. So, talk to us about what the experience was yesterday, leading up to the game, about the excitement and the hype, and watching Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert making their major league debut.
I've been in a million hype fests, and this was a top three or five. I'll tell you, given the anticipation, having heard so much about
really? This
kid for the longest time, seeing him down in spring training. And I was thinking about, I can remember the buzz I got being at Ernie Shavers, Kenny Norton, seeing Muhammad Ali fight for the championship, being at Super Bowls. I mean, it was in that neighborhood, that kind of excitement, because of the buildup of this whole, you know, rebuild with the Mariners, and that this was the name that just kept coming up, Jared Kelnick, and lately Gilbert. One of the things I've always liked about the kid, when I saw him the brief time I was in spring training in 2020, he reeks of confidence. I mean, I love it. I mean, he's got some swag to him, man. You know, it's like he walks up to the plate like, I'm bad. I know it. You know it. I'm approved. I like it, man. I really do. And I think the fans are going to lock in on that. And I was praying yesterday in the Zoom call. I said, dude, you got to swing the first pitch. You got to swing the first pitch. He said, hey, if it's a cookie, I'm going for it. And I was so thrilled when he did, and that ball jumped off his bat. I was thinking, get up, get out of here, please. And it was then the fan had an opportunity to make a play and didn't make the play. Come on. How about that?
How about having two guys on the air that saw Ali fight Shavers and Norton at the same time?
Yes, sir.
That's what's crazy, Big Daddy. Talk about Logan Gilbert a little bit. How do you feel like he looked and I kind of got the sense that this may be a little too early for him. I don't know. What did you see?
Well, I wasn't expecting, you know, Don Drysdale, but I was impressed. I mean, he made two mistakes and he paid for it to two legit home run hitters. I mean, Jose Ramirez is it's an all-star friend. Mel Reyes is one of the strongest guys in the game. He made two mistakes there, and that really hurt him. But I thought his poise was terrific. He didn't walk anybody. Struck out five in four innings. If the Mariners aren't hitting right now, I mean, four runs is not monumental to overcome. So, you know, you just hope at some point that the Mariner hitters are going to start getting going. I mean, they won yesterday's game last in the American League. But, you know, if they were gamers, man. They came back, and, you know, Bill Moore hits a home run in the eighth inning. But there was a lot to like in that kid. I'm telling you, the poise, you didn't get the feeling that it was like, oh, my God, I'm out of here. What am I going to do now, you know? You know, in case of emergency, break glass. That wasn't the case. No, I liked his poise. I really did.
Yeah, Dave, I thought the same thing. And I love the fact that, look, he gives up a home run. He gives up a hit. The very next batter, he's going and pitching a first pitch strike, and he did that consistently. And this is going to be a learning process for both of these guys. What would you say to fans in their immediate reaction, where the expectation that they had that both these kids would come and light the world on fire, and they're in panic mode? Oh no, these guys aren't going to pan out. What would you encourage everybody who's feeling that way or thought that way last night?
Well, if you're a baseball fan, you know things. It's not, you know, this isn't click your heels, you know, wink your nose, blink an eye, and things are going to automatically, magically make you a world champion. That's not going to happen. It's a process. And they have survived. They've succeeded in the initial stage of the process to get into, succeed in the minors, and now they make the graduation. All right? It's an adjustment period. Yeah, you know, people, you know, want to see them the first time. And, you know, we say it all the time. You're going to go out there and establish yourself early on. People will adjust to that. Then you have to do the readjustment. I mean, it's just tried and true in baseball and pretty much any sport. So I just think that when you look at these guys, the upside is terrific. That's why, you know, that's why they're here at such a young, tender age.
It's kind of the fun part of it too, Dave, as opposed to seeing other guys brought up. You know now that the guys being brought up are the guys you're going to be watching for the next couple of years. That these are the pieces. These are not placeholders. These are the guys who are going to be the future for this team, and we're going to see them streaming up here all year long.
Yeah, that's a great point, Gratz. And, you know, I'm not a gardener, but people I know, one of my grandfathers was a gardener, and, you know, you cultivate, you dig that hole, you plant it, you water it, you nurture it, put it in the sun. You grow it. That's the fun part, to be able to grow with the team. I mean, Houston did that, you know, when I remember they came in here, what, 2011, 12, and they won. One year they won 53 games, and they took step by step by step, you know, Evan Costello, inch by inch, that whole thing. And look where they are now. I mean, a perennial contender, and that's who the Mariners are shooting for. And hopefully there's a World Series or two championship in the mix coming up. And, you know, it's encouraging. I got a kick out of seeing Ryan Divish tweeted that the boys down at Tacoma and Taylor Trammell went 4-for-5, couple of ribbies, couple of doubles. You know, maybe he goes down and he gets straightened out and bring him back up here. And at some point, you just hope these guys, the hitting just can't, I just can't see the hitting stand where it is right now for the whole season. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I certainly hope it doesn't stay there, along with every other Mariner fan. But it would be quite a shock if that was the case. Dave, what did you make of Scott Servais putting Jared Kelnick right at the top of the lineup right from the get go?
I love it. He's your stud, Lenny Meeks. Come on, he's and the kid has been super successful everywhere he's been. I mean, I'm looking at numbers. You know, his numbers were outstanding at every step he's been. And I remember when the trade was made with the New York Mets, and, you know, I live in New York, but I'm not here, and one of my best friends and my former radio partner, Ed Coleman, covers the Mets for WFAN. And I remember when the trade was made, and he was pissed, and then he said, I can tell you this, the kid can hit. And he's proven. And if what your scouts and what the numbers and what the video and everything tells you, hey, put the kid in there, lead him off. Why not? And, you know, give him a chance to get 4 ABs, and that's what happened. And he hit that ball to left center in the eighth inning, a 2-1 pitch, and it looked like, hey, that might have been a double to get down. I'm looking forward to watching and hopefully calling his first hit in the major leagues.
Does he remind you of anyone, Dave, coming into the game with such swagger and confidence like he did last night?
Boy, that's a good one. I had a buddy of mine that reminds you of Ted Williams. I went, nah, what are you talking about? Ted Williams is 6'3", long, tall, skinny, the whole thing. But he has such an athletic presence when he walks. And, you know, he's got a great athletic, his setup in the box. And looks like it's a spring just ready to explode on you. Nobody comes to mind, but, you know, give me a few more ABs and seeing him in person. But it's just it's a really good athletic look. And he knows, he maximizes it, man. So he's been impressive. I've heard nothing but great things about him, you know, work ethic. And I thought he handled himself yesterday in the media Zoom. I thought he was outstanding. And the other thing I like too, he praised Logan Gilbert for his work ethic as well, and the sacrifices that both their families have made to get these guys here, and how excited that they are to be here. And the other thing, he talks about being a locker mate with Gilbert and how they faced each other, you know, the alternate camps and all the other stuff, and they would go head-to-head, and they learned a lot from each other. And Kelnick was talking about how good Gilbert's stuff is. So, I mean, this is trending. This is definitely trending in the right direction. Right now, the biggest thing, grab your rosary beads, say prayers, good health the rest of the way.
absolutely, Dave. No doubt about that. And we've seen that with the starting rotation, right? I mean, that has been something that has been, in terms of going according to plan, that has not been the case for the Mariners with their starting rotation. What have you made of that transition, how the Mariners have handled that, and what you expect to see from these guys moving forward?
Well, you do what you do. You got guys in the roster, you bring them up and say, all right, dude, you're up. You got it. It's your turn. Let's go. We need you. I mean, it's as simple as that. I mean, it's just – it's such a bummer to have seen, you know, Pax go down. I mean, what, 24 pitches, and I'm sitting there, I can't remember if it's on radio or TV when that happened, but it was like, are you kidding? Come on, man, really? And then, you know, Marjan Vicious goes down, LJ Newsom goes down. I mean, it just, and Middleton's down. Hey, that's why you get guys in the roster. They're professionals. You bring them up and you hope that, the going gets, you know what, they got to make it happen.
I imagine it's feeling a little more, like, not completely normal, but more like normal than it was last year out there at the ballpark.
I'm thrilled to have people in the stand. I'm thrilled to have, you know, ground ball to short and you're here to crowd making noise and the rising, you know, the crescendo of the crowd making noise. The ball gets blasted. It goes out and they go nuts. It looks like it's got, no, it's great. I feel the buzz immediately when I get to the ballpark and you see, you know, the event staff cleaning off the seats. You see the grounds crew working, and then at 5 o'clock the horn blows and people start coming into the ballpark. That's what we grew up with. That's the circumstance that we want to be in. And I'm proud of everybody for, you know, sucking it up and sacrificing this last coming up on what, almost a year and a half, and to get through this. We're not done yet, but we're, you know, the finish line certainly within reach.
Dave, are you guys traveling with the club yet?
No, we haven't traveled at all since, I remember getting the call, it's time to bug out, March 10th, and you can go home now. And I was on a plane then, and I was on a plane coming back here in July. And so I've been on four planes, to and from New York.
Wow.
We're not traveling as of yet. I would love to. I mean, that's a big part of the job. I thoroughly miss going down in the clubhouse and being at the batting cage. Hey, what you got for me? What's going on? How you feeling? What happened last night? Hey, what do you got today? How you feeling? How's the family? How's the kid? I mean, just the usual, you know, interplay and interaction you have with guys. And that's, you know, you develop relationships. You can go down and ask a guy a question. I mean, as I told somebody the other day, my Woodward and Bernstein days are over. I'm not trying to crush anybody. I'm a Mariner employee, proud of it. You know, we draw from the same, you know, trough there. So, you know, I'm trying to tell the story of these guys, and I really miss. I mean, the Zoom's great, but, you know, you get one or two guys, whereas every day I can hit, you know, five or six guys in our clubhouse, the manager, coaches. I can go to the other clubhouse, get the manager, a couple, three other guys, and I got, you know, I have some ammunition. But this way, it's different. You know, it's, you know, beats digging a ditch for a living. Don't get me wrong. It's not a hardship, but it's just different. And I look forward to getting back to, quote-unquote, normal.
I wonder how the players and coaches feel about it.
I would imagine some are saying, hey, why the suckers are not in here? We don't need them guys. But, you know, we're telling you stories, pal. And any ancillary money and benefits you may get, it's because, you got what was the line from, the man who shot Liberty Valance, when in doubt, print the truth of the legend. You know, it's like, come on, we're building the empire, pal. Right. Come on, let's go. We're selling the game. Let's go. Let's rock and roll. Come on. So that's the deal, man, and that's how we sell the sport too, and that part of the game is really missed, and every I talk to my peer group, other announcers are saying the same thing, you want to, it's part of the daily routine, and there's probably no sport more routine oriented and directed driven than baseball, for crying out loud.
Well, if you recognize that voice, this is Dave Sims, play-by-play voice of the Mariners for both Root Sports and the Seattle Mariners Radio Network on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Dave, thank you for coming on with us, spending some time talking with us. We loved it.
Jake, hope to meet you sometime. Graz, Colonel, be well. Hang in there, kid.
Okay, Big Daddy.
Thanks, Dave.
He's an old
Don't forget,
an old
you can
buddy.
Stream... Yeah, no, it's I can't wait to meet Dave as well. I can't wait to get to the park and meet some of these guys that we've been talking to. Graz, you know everybody. For me, this is still new, and getting a chance to meet some of these guys like Dave, who I've watched for years and years. I'm excited for that to eventually be the case. So as we get closer and closer, Graz, it seems like we're almost there. We're getting to the home stretch of this thing, mm-hmm. and And, you know, exciting stuff on the horizon. Don't forget, you can stream your favorite 710 ESPN Seattle shows at home through your smart speaker. And if you don't have one, head to 710sports.com/win now, where you can enter to win one. It's one a day for the month of May. And this month, we're going to give you 31 chances to win a 710 ESPN Seattle logoed smart speaker. Head to 710sports.com/win to learn how. All right, DJ, let's head to Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
All right, first down, Jake. Are you concerned about the Seahawks offense having to learn a new playbook with the players not attending OTAs?
Yes, I am concerned about it, because any time that you have to learn a new playbook, and especially one that is as sophisticated as Shane Waldron's playbook is, it's always easier to be in person, to learn with the coaching staff, to be able to go out and execute it out on the field. And everybody's a different learner, DJ and Graz. You could be a cerebral guy and be able to look at diagrams and be able to talk through it and understand it. There are other guys who need to go out there and get the reps and execute it on the field to learn and grow and understand where they need to be and the mistakes so that they can correct them moving forward. So not having the players out there for OTAs isn't ideal if you're Pete Carroll and the rest of the coaching staff. However, the players have shown that they can make it work. A great example of this is Tom Brady going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, learning a new offense, learning a new system, the Bucs having to adjust with Tom Brady as well in the process, and they were able to go out and execute and win a Super Bowl. So although the difficulty, I believe, is high, I think they have the right leadership and the right group that can get it done through the virtual offseason. And don't be surprised if you see, you know, Russell Wilson and the guys on offense and Bobby Wagner and the guys on defense get together at different points in time on their own so that they can try and, you know, make up some of the lost time that they've had during OTAs.
Second down. All right. Jake, is it okay with you if I ask Graz a question here for second down? It's not a football question, Graz, but I got a question for you.
I put this question down for open debate. Open debate here.
All right, Graz, I got a question here for you. No, not football related, but with the debut of Jared Kelenic and Logan Gilbert last night, where did that rank with the debuts of like Felix and A-Rod and Griffey?
Well, I don't think it compared to Griffey. A-Rod played September, his rookie season. So it was, you knew he was going to play. So it was mandated in his contract. So it wasn't that big. Felix was big because he was a phenom and was just coming up as a teenager. And of those ones, I would say that the biggest one was Griffey, obviously, just because of the name and everything. But in recent vintage, it was Felix. Felix's debut was the one that got people the most excited. He was blowing through that organization, and was a tremendous amount of enthusiasm to see this guy, barely 20 years old. I think he was 19 years old, actually making his major league debut, and actually had a pretty decent game, if I remember correctly. So I'd say of those guys, Junior, Felix, they were the top two.
Third down. All right, Jake, with Seahawk rookie minicamp going on over the weekend, who do you want to hear positive reviews about from Pete Carroll?
Okay, I'm going to give you four names that I want to hear positive reviews of. Number one, Dwayne Eskridge, your second round pick. I want to hear positive reviews about him, where he's at, the maturity, the development that he has already had, and the idea that this guy is going to surprise people with how much of an impact he can have right out of the gate. Number two, this is an undrafted priority free agent here, DJ. I'm going to give you Tamarion Terry. We had Jim Nagy on with us a few weeks ago. We're talking about how the Seahawks in the undrafted signings that they made, they basically had a whole nother draft because they were able to get some really good quality players. Tamarion Terry out of Florida State, receiver, is a very, very intriguing name that I'm excited to hear Pete Carroll and the rest of the coaching staff comment on. And if he could develop into a really nice weapon, I think that would be a cherry on top. Then I'm going to give you two defensive players. Trey Brown, your fourth round pick, I want to hear about him, you know, bringing that edge, that tenacity, everything that they loved about him in their evaluation process here over the weekend at Rookie Minicamp. I want to hear about his skills, his development, and his savviness. Those are the things that I want to hear coming out of Pete Carroll's mouth when it comes to Trey Brown. And last but not least, Daryl Taylor. Yes, he was a part of last year's draft class. He's not a part of this year's rookie draft class, but because he didn't play a snap, he didn't play a down on the 53-man roster for the Seahawks last year due to injury, he gets to participate in rookie minicamp. And this will be the first real action that the coaching staff will be able to have him out on the field, truly going 100% speed. And I want to hear what the coaching staff feels, where Daryl Taylor is at in this process, where he fits in, and what role they see him fitting in on this defense. So those are four names that I want to hear good, positive reviews about.
Fourth down. Oh, I really like this question. What defensive player for the Seahawks, Jake, has to find himself a role in 2021?
Ooh. All right, DJ. Who do you think I'm going to say?
I think you're going to say Marquise Blair.
Oh, DJ, you read my mind. Yes, that is true. Marquise Blair has to find himself a role. Year three, second round pick. You picked him before DK Metcalf. This is a talented football player. This isn't a question of whether Marquise Blair, I believe talent-wise, is a bust or not. I believe he's a fantastic player. The problem was is that you didn't put him on the field as a rookie. He got injured in year two when you found like you had a role for him carved out that he was ready to excel at. And now in year three, you're in a rock and a hard place because you got two established great safeties. Ugo Amadi played really well at that nickel spot last year. Does Marquise Blair, is he able to win that job back from Ugo Amadi? What does his role look like? Can he find himself a very defined and successful role in this defense? Why is it important? One, I think it makes them more talented on defense. It makes them faster. And Marquise Blair has a physical playmaking presence on the field. And that's what I want to see them add to everything else that they already have on this roster, this defensive roster. And I think if they're not able to find a role for Marquise Blair, I think it'll be an absolute shame because high second round pick, he's got to perform.
He's got to show that he can stay healthy, though, too, doesn't he, Jake? He's got to show.
Yeah, he does.
He's got to show he's got that skill.
Yes, and that is a big skill, Graz. When I was in the locker room, when I was in the NFL, all the time you heard from players, your best ability is your availability. That was the mantra, and that is certainly the case for guys like Rashad Penny. That's certainly the case for Marquise Blair. You are dead on with that, Graz. All right, well, the best performance from the Mariners didn't even happen at the big league level last night. We will tell you who that was next, coming up on the timeline.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Welcome to The Timeline. This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by The Pro Club. Graz, before we get into the timeline, the top stories of the day, I gotta say, today is a special treat for me because I'm hosting for the first time of the Jake and Stacy show. Stacy is a workaholic. She doesn't take any time off, so it's great to get her out the door and get her on vacation. But getting to host this show with you is truly a blast. We've done a lot of shows together. We've had our time together and interviewing you and all that. But it is, I got to say, it is an absolute treat for me to have you on. You have been, I don't want to pump your tires up too much, Graz, but you know, you were a big part of my family. You know, my dad, we listened to you every single day on the radio, and so it is an honor. It is a blast to be able to do this show with you.
Well, it's really nice of you to say that, and it's a lot of fun for me too. And I wasn't going anywhere. You didn't have to say that. I wasn't going to leave before the hour was up.
Well, Graz, I was starting to get worried there, about you, I felt like I needed to get you, you know, get everything going again, get the juices flowing.
you're doing the heavy lifting, man. You're doing a great job. I'm just here to help out.
Well, I appreciate that, Graz. You're doing a fantastic job of that. Graz, how about this story for you? Timberwolves owner Glenn Taylor has finally reached an agreement on his $1.5 billion sale of the club to Alex Rodriguez and e-commerce mogul Mark Lohr, according to multiple reports. So, Graz, I got to ask you the question. What is the expectation that you have for Alex Rodriguez to be an owner of a basketball team?
He moves them, right?
I would have to imagine.
No, I'm kidding about that. I don't think. Go ahead.
You don't think so? You don't think that that A-Rod ends up moving the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Well, I mean, probably part of the deal in selling it to him was that he wouldn't. You know, the way the NBA is set up nowadays, Jake, is if you agree to get a publicly built arena built, you won't lose your team. That's why the Sacramento didn't come up here, because Kevin Johnson, the mayor of Sacramento, said we'll build an arena and have taxpayers pay for it. And if they do the same thing in Minnesota, he won't be able to move them. But I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it if I'm the Timberwolves, their owner. It's an interesting thing. It's an interesting crossover. No pun intended there, and I'll be curious to see what he does do. But if things don't go smoothly, I won't be surprised. How about that?
Yeah, I hear you on that. And if you're Alex Rodriguez and you're taking this opportunity to become an owner, I mean, my advice to A-Rod, you're not listening to me. You have millions upon millions of dollars. You have been a successful business person. But the reason also why he has been successful in a lot of his business dealings, Graz, is that he has a limited amount of he has a limited role in his investments, right? He, for the most part, you're hiring people, or you're buying into something that is a commodity that other people are running for you. And much like Paul Allen and Jody Allen, of what they've done here in Seattle, they have been a figurehead. They have been the owner. They have provided, right, for a lot of the needs of what the general manager or the coaching staff has needed here in Seattle. But they have not tried to be overbearing. And I think, you know, if Alex Rodriguez can take any advice of that, like, don't worry about trying to be Jerry Jones. Just let other people, hire the right people to manage and do their job to run that investment at a high quality. I mean, that's what I think great owners do, Graz.
Well, that's why I think he's going to have a very hard time being not in the spotlight, though. Very hard time. I think every fiber of his being is going to be wanting to sit at courtside.
What makes you say that, Graz? I mean, like, A-Rod, he is not Hollywood. He's a blue-collar kind of personality.
Oh, for crying out loud, Jake. For crying out loud.
I'm not selling you on that one? Okay. All right. I can't convince you of that. So I'm going to go,
one, brother.
So I got to go to the next story, which is what we teased to the people. The best performance from a Mariner didn't even happen at the big league level last night, Graz. It was Taylor Trammell down there with the Rainiers, going 4-for-5 with a 3-run home run in his first game down there at Cheney Stadium. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I used to when I did the show with Stelton, I used to say that there were certain guys, you know, there was AAA and then there were Major League, and there were guys in between, and I called them 4A. Guys who just were too good for AAA but could not quite make the adjustment to the Major Leagues. And we'll see if Taylor Trammell's in. I'm not putting him in that group yet, but clearly he's a guy who can hit at the AAA level. I mean, that's not going to be an issue. Daniel Vogelsberg was like that, you know, when he was here the last couple of years. Hit great down in Tacoma, but came up here and did not hit as well. A 4A hitter, so... Trammell is young. I think he's got a lot of ability, and he's an engaging guy. I think everyone likes him too, which means he's got a lot of people rooting for him. I hope that this is just a little hiccup on his way up, and he can come back up and be a factor out there, because he's got a lot of tools, and I think a lot of people like the way he plays the game as well. So I hope he's not a 4A guy and is a guy that can truly get it straightened out down in AAA and then reap the rewards in the major leagues.
Yeah, I hope he isn't either, Graz. Any category that Daniel Vogelback is in, I want Taylor Trammell to be far away from that. But I think you have a great point here. Is when you look at Taylor Trammell in the process, this also could be a great benefit to him of looking at it and going, look, I'm at the big league level. I didn't have necessarily the greatest success there. Made some big plays, made some highlight plays and highlight moments for the ball club, but needs to refine his skills. And if he can come down to the AAA level with the Rainiers, have that confidence with him, be able to hit, you know, put the bat on the ball and be able to generate that confidence again and be able to, you know, continue to redevelop his game, I think that bodes well for him to come back to the big league club. Somebody else that I would desperately love to see that happen with, Graz, is Evan White. I would love to see Evan White to be able to come down to the Rainiers and be able to just work on his swing. I mean, you know, Graz, one of the great frustrations that I have is Evan White in his profile coming out of college, great defensive first baseman, a guy who made just a ton of contact on the ball. And since he's come here to the Mariners, he's been, you know, touted as this this home run machine, and he's going to, you know, tear the cover off the ball. And it just seems like he's more trying to hit the ball hard than he is trying to actually make contact.
Yeah, you know, you gave him a major league contract, though, Jake. I mean, that's one of the things about White, you know, that's going to keep him up here. Look, you can't be hitting 130 or 140. So, I mean, the adjustment point will have to happen at some point. But it's better for everyone if he can figure it out on the major league level. And that's saying a lot, and it's very difficult to do. But you know, they are paying him on the major league level. He may need just what you say. I mean, if they can identify what it is, you know, a swing problem or something like that, you know, that's something you can fix with your hitting coach in the major league level. But if they can identify something like that, that's something you got to break down the swing and start all over again. That's something that's better done in the minors. And we'll see, because I don't think they'll keep him up here much longer, despite the fact his defense is so great, if he's only hitting 130.
Yeah, I fully agree with you on that. And the hard thing is you can see the talent. The talent is there. It's not a question of, man, this guy just does not have it. I think he does. It's just there needs to be some adjustment there. Fully agree with you there, Graz. Earlier we talked about how the offense for the Seahawks has the most to prove. But coming up next, we're going to tell you why the defense has the most to prove. But which player on defense has the most to prove, and which player has the most reason for their success? Text your answers into 710-710. We'll discuss that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Now, we're going to get right into it, Graz, because this is going to be a tough sell, I believe. We made a pretty good case about the offense for the Seahawks having the most improved in 2021. But I want us to go out there and put our best defense lawyer hat, or I guess prosecution in this case, and we are going to say why the defense has the most to prove in 2021. You look at what happened last year. They started out the year, Graz, as one of the worst defenses in history. They were on their way to be the worst passing defense in history. Mm-hmm. They turn that around. They fix it in the second half of the season. But, Graz, are you buying it? Have they truly turned it around? And that's my biggest question heading into 2021.
Well, I think it's a great question, especially when you consider you've lost Shaq Griffin, you know, your cornerback. You don't know about KJ Wright at this point in time. And just like you said, the defense you were playing the first 8-9 weeks of the season wouldn't have mattered how good the offense was. You were going nowhere if you couldn't stop those offenses. And the Buffalo game was the one that really kind of opened everyone's eyes up to really how much the defense was struggling. We didn't realize how good Buffalo was perhaps at that point in time. But they did make the changes and got the defense back on board. But you know, can they do it for the full season? Can they do it with those guys a year older? Can they do it with other guys in key spots that weren't there last year? You know, are some of these young guys, you talked about Daryl Taylor and some of these other guys, ready to step up? Is LJ Collier ready to step up and be the player he can be? There are a lot of question marks on a defense that needs to be better for the entire year. It needs to be what they were the last 6 weeks of the season for the entire season. So I think anyone who thinks the pressure is all on the offense is just not listening, or at least wasn't listening an hour ago, I hope.
Yeah, definitely don't listen to the argument we made an hour ago. Focus on the here and now. Be present with us right now. Now, the thing, Graz, that I keep going back to with this defense is, who are they really? Who are they really? Because in the first half, as we mentioned with the offense, the same thing happened with the defense. It was a tale of two halves with the defense in terms of how bad they were. They turn it around in the second half of the season. And the defense, they're doing it against one of the struggling – they're doing it versus the worst offenses in the NFL at that time. You look at Philadelphia. They are really struggling at that point with Carson Wentz. It was an absolute mess there in Philly. New York had one of the worst offenses, and they didn't even have Daniel Jones at the quarterback position at that time. You lose only give up 17 points, but still you lose to Colt McCoy and the New York Giants. You take it to the New York Jets, which you should have done. You only give up 15 points to the Washington Football Team, but they're on a two-minute drive, ready to go win the game at the end, right? You needed a heroic effort by Carlos Dunlap to steal the game with a sack, right? You take care of the Rams, which was a good performance, I thought, there in Week 16. Mm-hmm. You go and place the 49ers, who don't even have they don't even have Jimmy Garoppolo or their backup quarterback in Nick Mullins. They have C.J. Beathard at quarterback, and they barely sneak out with a win in that game. Go to the wild card round, they lose to the Rams, give up 30 points. Obviously, one of those being a pick six, but they struggled versus an offense led by a broken thumb, Jared Goff.
Right, that was just the point I was going to make. You know, against the Ram offense that was really limited, dramatically limited, and so yeah, there's a lot of question marks on the defense that need to be answered this year, and it's going to have to be an infusion of some new players that need to make the difference. Youthful enthusiasm, should carry the weight. You know, you're going to bring some of those veterans back, but there's definitely room for Jake, and there's going to be some key guys who are in their second or third year that'll make or break this defense this year.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And one of the big factors of the defense turning things around was their pass rush. Their pass rush turned the corner in a big, big way, going from one of the worst pass rushing units to being one of the best to finish the year statistically in totality. And, you know, Carlos Dunlap was a huge factor in that. This offseason, they go in, they add more depth. They're able to re-sign Dunlap. They're able to re-sign Benson Mayoa. They get Kerry Hyder Jr. We'll see what ends up happening with the legal situation with Alden Smith, but you're hoping that Daryl Taylor is going to add a spark to this group as well. So you hope that's able to be sustained there, Graz. But you mentioned Russell Wilson being the player that was the highest paid player on offense and needing to step up. Well, I'm going to point to the two highest paid players following Russell Wilson, which is Bobby Wagner at $18 million per year, and then it's going to be Jamal Adams, who is going to be right behind him with his big new contract and all the draft capital that the Seahawks gave up. They need those two guys to step up and play huge, play up to that to that caliber this season, that level of impact play, in order for this defense to be as good as it can be and for them to be a team that, or a defense that can complement the offense and be able to hold their own when it comes to playing good quality playoff opponents.
Let me ask you about Adams, Jake. It's one thing that I'm a little concerned about, because I love the hybrid position that he's playing, and I think he's a hugely impact, as they do, a hugely impactful player when he plays, but the way he plays, is it going to be a constant concern about him getting hurt, do you think?
I hope not, because honestly, in his career, Graz, he hasn't been a guy who has been hurt very much. His first 3 years in the league with the Jets, he was a very, very healthy player. It was one of the reasons why I initially liked the trade, was not only were you getting a superstar player, but you were getting a guy that remained on the field. This last year, that wasn't the case. Multiple, you know, shoulder injuries, dealt with some broken fingers. And so in order for this trade and eventual signing to pay off, Graz, I believe that he has the impact ability to make the trade worthwhile, to make the pay worthwhile. Mm-hmm. But you're right. The health factor has to be different this time around. I know Jamal Adams is going to be highly motivated to make sure that that is the case, and they need it because – you know, look, they had Ryan Neal step in spots, and that was good. He did a good job. He did fine, but he doesn't bring the same level of impact play that Jamal Adams has and can have on this defense, not only in terms of the play, but the leadership, right? The leadership, the energy, the fire starter that Jamal Adams is. So,
all those things.
All right, Graz. Well, yeah.
No, I was just going to say all those things you talked about is exactly the case. It's exactly the case that you know he can do all that. You know he was electrifying when he was healthy last year and made some great plays that only he could make. So yeah, most definitely you want to keep him healthy if you can and hope that it's not wear and tear that's dragged him down because he is an electrifying presence on the football field.
Well, Graz, I think we did a pretty good job stating our case about why the defense has plenty to prove in 2021. Next, we're going to go – Tom Brady used an analogy to describe his Week 4 matchup against the Pats. Some people were rubbed the wrong way by it, but I actually thought it was pretty funny. That's coming your way in NFL headlines at 1:15. But first, let's talk Gilbert, Kelnick, and everything Mariners with our buddy Ryan Roland Smith next.